A brand new documentary to follow, 40 Minutes of Hell. And if you're not going to make it to the game, you can watch it on ESPN tomorrow night. An old friend and the head coach of the team featured in said documentary joining us now on the Revolution Hotline, Nolan Richardson. Coach, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
We're good.
Great, Coach. Great.
We're excited about the documentary. We're excited about the game tomorrow. Chris Bond was just on with us for a few minutes. I know you had a chance to talk to him about the documentary, so I'm assuming you've had a chance to see the finished product.
Yes, I have. I had the opportunity to see it a couple of times, and they did, an excellent job for ESPN.
So you were pleased with the way everything came out?
Yes.
How long did they take to film? How many days did they spend with you to come up with this?
It came up a couple of times. One day, I guess, it was maybe 4 or 5 hours. I guess that was the one of the longer days. And then we did something at the university. Oh, I would say 2-3 hours there, too. So probably a total of 10, 12 hours.
I think the film is right at about 45 minutes. Do you think in that amount of time they were able to capture the spirit of what the documentary is?
Yes, again, my story, as the book writer said, that you could write 9 books and still not have enough. Mm-hmm. And for the amount of time they had and to get what they had to do, that's a very difficult task to just really pinpoint everything. So from the standpoint of letting it be, seeing about what was happening and how we did what we did, I think they did an excellent job of doing that.
Coach, I was asking Pat earlier, and I don't know if he knows. I certainly don't know. The phrase 40 minutes of hell, it's just part of the vernacular here in Arkansas, but I was wondering about the genesis of that, where it came from, how you sort of adopted that, and how you explained to your team what you were looking for in that regard.
Well, as I, the 40 minutes of hell came from, the little young man that was named Scott Rose, one of my first teams, and our workouts, our workouts, the first 40 minutes of all my workouts from high school to junior college to Tulsa University, the first 40 minutes was really hell. You had to go through it. Then we work on basketball things, but the conditioning, I've always been a very firm believer that fatigue would make cowards of us all. And I got that when I was a young coach from Vince Lombardi. And he was telling the truth. And so when we were working one time, Scotty came up and said, "Coach, we're going to do this every day." I said, "Every day, first 40 minutes, expect it." And he said to me, "Coach, but that's like 40 minutes of hell." And I said, "You got it right. That's what it's like." Well, what happened was that we played. We weren't very good, but we won a game one night, and I think Scotty said something to the newspaper writer that we put 40 minutes of hell on him. Hmm. So the guy comes over and asks me, "Y'all got this new offense, 40 minutes of hell?" I said, "No. We practiced 40 minutes, our first 40 minutes of hell. Is that what you're talking about?" No. So he wrote 40 minutes of hell, and from that point on, it stuck. I go back to my high school teams, and all of them have gone through what all these other kids have gone through. I said, "But the only difference there, fellas, it was 32 minutes of hell." That's how long the high school game was. But anyway, that's how I probably got started and stayed at that point. But it's about how hard we work our kids and how I knew that the game was 40 minutes long. If I can get you through 40 minutes of conditioning and work, then the other part becomes easy.
Nolan Richardson joining us in the zone, as if I have to explain to everybody who that voice is. But, Coach, I was going to ask, I know you've had a lot of interview requests and requests to do things like the book and the documentary. Have you ever thought initially, you know what, I think I've talked about it enough, that maybe you were just like, I'm not going to do it this time. I don't think we're going to do it anymore. Or are you always eager to continue to tell the story, especially of your team's successes over the years?
Not necessarily. I'm not one of those that if it's out there to be done and they need my opinion or they need me to help, convey the story, then I usually will try to do. That has been part of me anyway. That's why my phone was always in the book. phone number. I never avoided, stayed away from anyone. That's why when I made the statement, don't call me at home anymore, because I tried to make everything accessible and easy for people to do their job and get in touch with me. So I don't run around preaching it. If they, you know, I don't. It's done. It's been done, and hopefully, from what has happened, a lot of good things have come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's important to me. What have come out of the things that I have done? Have the doors opened? Are there more people that you thought should have gotten opportunities? And it's not only here in Arkansas. I'm talking about around the country. That's what I'm about.
Coach, I've always said that your story, on certain levels, anybody can relate to it, because you are not a knock-on-the-door kind of guy. You kick the door down. And just how many do you still, even today, have people try to approach you about, whether it was what, you know, they read your story or they saw the team play, and just the kind of a motivation? I've always said that you're the master motivator. And, you know, every opportunity for you is a teaching moment. And I'm just curious if you still get, even though you're not coaching anymore, do you still get people coming up and trying to tell you those stories and relate their life to what, you know, some of the things you went through?
Yes, I do. The thing that's really, really great at that time is that I can receive things through the mail, a letter, something, talking about some of the things that have happened to me in my life. And some of the youngsters, it's amazing. Some of the guys, I had no idea they were paying attention through my camps. Tell me some of the things I have said to them or said to the group, and they carried with them, you know, as a motivating factor. You know, I always would say, if it is to be, it's up to me. I'm the guy that's going to be in control of my ship. And many times I've heard that over and over again. I've done this, Coach, because, as you said before, it's up to me to be the best I can be. So, yes, I've got that. And I get a lot of, that's what I do now, is I go around and try to motivate people. You know, when you got kids who don't have parents. I didn't have parents. I know what it feels like. I know what it feels like to be discriminated against. I know what it's about, because I was there. I was there when it first seemed to start. So those experiences are good to pass on to those who did not understand those experiences.
Speaking of going around and speaking, I know you had a chance to go to Conway recently, Coach, and visit with Corliss Williamson, who is now Coach Williamson, and talk to his team before their game. And it was funny talking to Coach the other day. He said, when you first walked in, I mean, he knew there was a possibility you would come in, and I know they were trying to set something up, him and Scotty, but he said when you first walked in, it kind of freaked him out a little bit, because he'd go back to that same old player-coach relationship, and he said he kind of had to wake himself up and go, wait a minute, I'm the coach now, this is my role now. But tell me about, for you, what a sense of pride that has to be to watch one of your former players as a coach now.
Oh, that's the greatest feeling in the world. I had taken over the women's team, and I wasn't able to get there last year. I thought I had a summer job. This was three or four months, but it turned out to be a 12-month job.
Mm-hmm.
So this year I was wanting to get up there and kind of look at his team and visit with him. And I try to do that with all the players and ex-coaches that used to be on my staff, that if there's anything that I can do to help, I want to be able to critique and do whatever I can to give you the opportunity. But to go and watch Corliss, I was so proud of watching his team play the game and how hard they worked. And then, of course, a couple of days later, I went back and watched them practice again. And so Nasty, to me, has got that great temperament to be a tremendous head coach. He's got the size. He's got the voice enough to demand, push a youngster, because he's been there and he's done that. And when you've been there and done it, it's a lot different, especially if you want to play an up-tempo game.
Coach, you got the book. We've got the documentary out now. I'm curious if there is anybody who's approached you, or if you have any interest in doing a full-length story, whether it's about some of your teams or your life, which certainly, as Pat kind of pointed out, would be a great, you know, big screen story. Has anybody approached you about that? Would you have any interest in that?
Well, I've had some underlining calls about whether or not I'd be interested in. And to be honest with you, I don't really go around thinking about it. But if it comes about, I would certainly sit down and visit about it at any time. That's what the book guy and the Rust and our agent had spoken about when they first started working on the book.
The good thing is you can fictionalize a couple things. So you could be a scratch golfer. Pat Bradley could be good looking in the movie. I mean, you could make some things up along the way. It'd be fun.
All we got to do is base it on the truth.
That's it.
Coach, I know Justin wanted to know, too, who would play you in the movie?
Oh, I have no idea. Probably Mike Anderson.
I thought you were going to go with Denzel Washington.
That's what I was thinking. But,
I tell you, I would have no idea, no clue. Or the guy that I always loved and loved his voice and was Earl Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He was always one of my favorite kind of guys, you know. But I don't have no clue and really don't even know that would even take place. But it's flattering to think about that it could happen.
Speaking of Coach A, the basketball coach, not the actor, what about his team, Coach? And we've seen it this year, and I know you've seen this with other teams over the years, too. You got a young bunch who has had trouble finding their way on the road, but certainly have played very well at Bud Walton. What are your thoughts on his team and what they might do to get things pointed in the right direction, especially when they're away from the comfy confines of Bud Walton?
Well, I think, first of all, I think when you talk about a team that's not very good away from the Bud Walton, I'm really, to be honest with you, I'm really surprised they're really good at Bud Walton because I don't see what everybody else sees. I mean, I hear the word that, boy, he's talented. I don't think he's no more talented than the worst team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got some good pieces. I think he needs to have some more recruits. I mean, Marshawn Powell, I went there when they first, I said, well, this kid can help him. But he goes down. And then I thought when he got the job, Clark, I said, now in this situation, he's going to be a tremendous player. But he's no longer there. Then there's one of them that was there that was a tremendous athlete.
Glenn Bryant.
Transfer.
Yeah.
You know, and
Glenn
I'm saying,
Bryant.
What the heck? Poor Mike, I mean, do you stop and think and look back what he left at Missouri? Think about that.
Yeah.
The kind of team, the kind of players that he left at Missouri. So, but this is not what he got when he came to Arkansas. So when you ask me that question, I'm saying, Mike, you are fighting your hearts. Those kids are fighting their hearts out on the road. They're coming up short. I mean, I didn't get to see the last ball game, but it didn't surprise me that they were going to have to fall flat on their face once in a while because, I mean, who do you call on? I mean, who's your go-to guy?
Right.
I mean, everybody says BJ. I mean, BJ is a pretty good player, but he ain't no answer to the answer. And so when you look at youngsters like, the older player, Sanchez, I mean, he goes down, but he's not a player that's going to score you points and going to really command the boards. I mean, he's just a very good role-type basketball player that really, you know, I like. I really like his efforts on the floor. The rest of them are the freshmen. I mean, the key players on his team, when the tough gets tough, is some of the freshmen have to come through. You know, so Hunter, I love Hunter. I think Hunter's got a chance to be a superb basketball player in time. But don't get me wrong. I think they play so hard. I think that Mike's got them playing hard, and that's what I told him. I said, you're whipping the battle with mirrors. You got eight guys in the scholarship, eight or nine guys around, and you're trying to play this kind of basketball. It's incredible that you're 16 wins at Bud. I said, hell, I only won 12 my first year with what they call some of the best players that Eddie left. And we won 12 games. So I don't see the team going on the road going to knock anybody big time. I mean, they got to hang around and maybe steal a game or two. Maybe. But to be able to steal them all at home, that's incredible to me.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I had an interesting conversation with you a couple days ago about the divisions, East and West, getting rid of those and going to one conference. And, you know, at first thought, what we all said, I was one of them, was, well, you know, you get rid of the West and, you know, you get your Western title. But you kind of surprised me what you said, and I thought it was fantastic. And can you talk a little bit about what you think about the conferences and divisions and what they've done?
Well, the thing that I've always thought, Pat, when we first went into the league, when they start talking about this is the East Division, the West Division, you play this team once, you play your side twice, well, then the team that wins the most games becomes the conference champion. But yet, I didn't go against Kentucky but once, or any other team that won the conference. You didn't really have a true champion to me. You could win the East or the West. That's okay. I've always thought that all of those teams should have a round robin. They play each other twice. That means you're going to have a true champion every time. The true champion is the team, the champion that's going to win the most games. But you're going to play everybody equal times. The question came up, but they beat up on each other. They won't get to go to the tournament. I don't buy that. I think when the conference is as strong as it is, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, even maybe the sixth team in that league has an opportunity to go to the tournament. It's just simple as that. Mm-hmm. Look what happened in the West last year. Nobody went from the West to the tournament. Which would have been exactly the way I had already described.
Yeah.
The West was not very good. So why should they go to the tournament? But if you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it don't matter what. There's no side. You're playing for the Southeast Conference Championship.
So you're a proponent of each team, Arkansas, or every team plays a home-and-home against everybody in the league.
Absolutely.
And that's the only true way that you can get a true champion from the league.
You're talking about 26 league games, though, with
the new
system. But you don't think that's an issue, Coach?
Well, why would it be? You don't have to go out. You don't have to go out and try to buy in so many games.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to do that. It's all the games are built in. They're all tremendous basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you got all these schools that are. You know, everybody's padding a little bit to get their 20 wins. You could do away with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, from a fan standpoint, that would be the ideal. You'd love that.
Yes. That was from the day we got into the league. Well, coming out of the Southwest Conference, that's what we did. We played everybody twice. So now I'm going into a league. I don't have to play everybody twice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that to me was really not a true champion.
There you go.
I buy into it. I love it. I think it'd be fantastic because if you did want to start the season with 3-4 of those.
Well, you'd still be able to play, yeah.
You can start the season
in December.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to wait to January, you can start in December and start your conference play, and you're right into it. I mean, you play 4 or 5 games, and then bingo, let's play basketball.
I like it.
And every night, boy, you got a game to play. You know, I think it ought to be that way around the whole country.
See, now what we got to do is get Coach in charge of the NCAA. Then we can get this all worked out.
Oh, Coach, I don't know. You don't seem like the kind of guy that would fare well if you walked through the NCAA doors.
I would love to see it. It would be good. That play, if any place in this world needs a shakeup, that's it. That would be fun. Okay. Well, Coach, I'm gonna put you on the spot here real quick.
Okay.
No, you do not have to think about offense at all here, so you don't have to hurt Pat's feelings if you don't put him on this team. If you had to have a top
Pat's
five.
That's my first man I'm going to put on the team, so go ahead.
Okay. I'm talking about a five-man group. I'm going to call it your all-disruption team because you know your team, you know, one of the calling cards was causing problems for the other team. If you had to pick five guys that you coached all time, anywhere you coached, to put on your all-disruption team, just to play defense, the offense is no factor. Who would you put on the team?
You know, the top pick that goes on that team is a young man that played at Tulsa University, Paul Pressey.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Pressey is the reason that I went into pressure-type defense. He had the long arms. He had his defensive maneuvers where he could guard you. He could guard a center forward. He could guard anybody. Plus, he touched more balls than anybody ever saw. And so You know, he would certainly be on that team. I tell you, another guy that would be on that team that gave his body and soul to the game was Mike Anderson. Mike took 7 charges in a comeback victory over Creighton one night that wow. I still to this day can't believe how many times that young man put his body at sacrifice and defensively, you know. And those are the two guys that come to mind immediately from the old school days, at least Tulsa, mm-hmm. and the Arkansas. You know, there becomes quite a few players that you know, Beck would have to enroll in a disruptive type role. And Clint McDaniel, Clint probably on the ball was the toughest, you know, guy that just the toughest nails to get next to you, you know. Again, most of the players that I'm picking look like it are guards. And I think that's where your game is won and lost on the defensive end is in the guards play.
Coach, I got 4. Pressey, Anderson, Beck, McDaniel. Who is the 5th on the all-disruptive team?
Well, then I'll have to choose from all the rest of those guys, and that's tough.
Yeah, maybe you just kind of come up with one player and mix in with who's got the fastest feet, fastest hands, best anticipation, good rebounder.
You need somebody on the backside to handle business, I guess, right?
Yeah, who is the best shot blocker that you coached?
Big O, statistically, right?
I could also, in disruptive type player would be Derek Hood.
Yeah,
Derek, you know, Hood was, Hood would go get shots and try to block. He was leading rebounders twice in the SEC. You know, so he would rank, you know, therefore you're talking about some players that would rank up there really big. You'd have him up in there. You know, it's amazing. Some of the guys that scored a lot, you know, when we used to rate our players, the scoring wasn't the thing that made you the player of the game. You know, it's the other little things you did, the charges you took, the deflections you made, the rebounds you got on the offensive end, the rebounds you got on defense. And so a lot of things came into play, and the guy who added at average 30 points, they got the newspaper headlines. But the guys who said, hey, this is the reason we really won, those were the guys that when you add up their grade, you saw they gave a lot more than the 30 points.
Coach, I know we're taking up a lot of your time, and obviously
I'm okay.
Okay, good, because you know, you're the kind of guy you could just go on and on and on and ask you questions all day. But just something popped to mind when you talked about grading players, and is a conversation that I heard you talk about in terms of recruiting to Arkansas, and you know how you got to win with maybe not the greatest talent. And when you recruited, and you always found a way to find those guys that had those special qualities about them, and grading guys differently and by doing other things. When you were recruiting, what did you look for? How did you grade them? Because you knew you had to get those kind of players on the hill that, you know, not always those 5 stars.
Let's go with you, Pat. When I graded you, that'd be a good one.
Huh, it worked, Coach. I wanted you to talk about me so good. Fell right into that one.
No, but I was grading you. Okay, I have what I call a checkpoint grade system. In other words, I don't know who you are. I have no clue when we go to the AAU games. I have no clue who you are, and all you have to do is catch my eye. So as you were running down the floor and you had the basketball, I wasn't for sure if you were a point guard or a 2 guard. I didn't know if you could shoot the basketball. But you made the shot. But I didn't know whether or not you caught it and shot it or you brought it down and shot it. So now I've got to watch a little bit more. But I'm not watching you per se. But then you catch my eye again. So I put a check mark. He caught it again. When you catch my eyes 3 times, then I clue in directly on you for the rest of that game. Now, foot speed, I start thinking, what is it that I cannot teach this guy? Instincts. You've got instincts. I said, I watch the way you move without the basketball on defense. Watch the way you move without the ball on offense. You see, there's a lot of things in basketball that the average person don't really know about, because it's not about X's and O's that I try to make people understand in this game. It's about IQ, basketball intelligence, understanding the game. So you knew how to get your shot off. You didn't have to be the quickest or the fastest or the high jumpingest, but you knew how to get your shot off. And that's important. There are players that you can work on for years and years, and they still can't get them to get their shot off on time. You know how to run the floor. And then if you're thinking in terms of how this guy is going to be effective in your system, we used to run, and you would run on and get on down the floor, because then they would have to find you in order to keep you from getting to your shot. Once we got you the ball, you know, I never did restrict you. You always had a green light. There were some players that didn't have that green light. So those are the things that you talk about. Those are the things that I saw. I mean, that's what I saw in Derrick Hood. That's what I saw in say, Lee Wilson or Scotty Thurman. You know, some of these guys that we're talking about, they weren't recruited big time. Maybe in their eyes they were. But Corliss Williamson could do so many different things. The Paul Presseys of the world. Not a whole lot of folks knew about Press, but I loved his reach, his touching of ball. I mean, it's just something that my instincts is what makes me try to find players, not what, you know, everybody draws on a piece of paper and say, hey, everybody knows a great player. Everybody knows James, King James. I went to recruit. I went to see him. I went to see Larry Johnson. I mean, everybody went to see him. I also went to see Lindsey Howell. Nobody knew Lindsey Howell. But what Lindsey could do, he caught my eye. He was a quick jumper to the ball. He could hit the little baseline jump shot. He could run. And he had toughness. And if you got toughness, you don't have to be a smart. You just have to be tough enough to withstand what I've got to give to you and how hard I got to work you. So all those things play a part. You never backed down, Patty. When we worked you out and pushed you, you never bitched or moaned or groaned. You just went through it like I thought you would.
Yeah, well, he saved it all up, and he does it here now, Coach. So, but he doesn't moan too much, so it's all right. But I know it's an experience that Pat certainly looks back on as the fondest days of his life. So,
yeah.
Well, Coach, I'm sure you'll be in attendance tomorrow.
I will be there.
All right.
I will be there. Yes, indeed. I will be there pulling for the Razorbacks, and my main guy there, Mike Anderson.
Right.
Hopefully they can pull off a big victory after having not such a ball game on the other night, but be able to bounce back. That's one of the things that we've worked and talked about. It's always try to bounce back. You know, don't put your dobber too low and don't get it too high. Just kind of get in a position where every time you come out on that floor, you think your kids have a chance to compete and win.
Looking for 17. Should be fun. Coach, I appreciate it very much, and I know the listeners enjoyed it as well. Thanks for coming on with us.
You got it, guys.
All right, y'all
have a good day.